Good afternoon, Carrboro and Chapel Hill. This is Wilp's Afternoon Radio Hour. Tentatively, right now, we're calling it the Peace and Freedom Hour. We do have a contest. If you have any better suggestions, please call me. I'm your host, Lori Hoyt, at 968-1888. Our engineer is Dick Paddock, and we have one of our Wilp sisters, Miriam Thompson, with us today. And she's brought some workers in from the municipal workers from Chapel Hill, and we're going to spend the first half hour of our show talking about labor issues, which are in needing some help here in Chapel Hill at the university and in the town. I just want to let you all know that WILF is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And Miriam, have your pen and pencil and paper ready, because we always tell you how to get more information. Thank you. Dick just reminded me about that. I'm going to turn this over right now to Miriam Thompson, a WILF sister.
This is, we hope, going to be one of our, we always have an exciting broadcast, but this is going to be one of our more exciting broadcasts, because this is WILF on the move. It is moving from local to national to global. We hope to cover it all in 1 hour, but we will have succeeding broadcasts. Everybody you meet today, you will meet again. We will have succeeding broadcasts to give you more information about workers' rights struggle. I should say that WILF has been instrumental in building community support for two struggles in our own town. One is the Municipal Workers, UE 150, and the Black Public Workers Association, which our NAACP sister branch has been supporting, and this has been decades of struggle. This is not new. They have been struggling to organize for a long time. We recently sponsored a meeting with the mayor in which we discussed, and you'll get more information when I turn it over to Steve Bader, who is the organizer for UE 150, and our two brothers, Clyde Clark and Kerry Bigelow, who we're proud to have with us. They've been looking at accountability, grievances, wages and promotions, reclassifications, all kinds of discriminatory issues that the town is not dealing with, and we have been discussing with the mayor. We will be moving on to the city council to get their support, but we are witnessing retaliation against workers who pursue grievances, challenge favoritism, promotional irregularities, and supervisor contacts. So what we're dealing with is a management culture, the same struggle we're having, which we'll talk about later with the housekeepers, yes, on the UNC campus. So I'd like to turn this over to Steve Bader and the two brothers.
My name's Steve Bader. I'm an organizer with UE Local 150, the North Carolina Public Service Workers Union. And before we get started, I'd like to ask our two brothers to give their name and what you do for a living.
Hi, my name is Kerry Bigelow. I work for Solid Waste Sanitation Department. I am a collector at this time.
My name is Clyde Clark. I work for Solid Waste, Town of Chapel Hill, collector.
Okay, thanks, brothers. As Miriam said, is that we're here to talk about broader labor issues, but the thing we're most concerned about today is an issue of retaliation that's going on in the town of Chapel Hill. And we just want to make folks aware, and want to give a number out a few times, 919-968-2743. That's the number for the Roger Stancil, the town manager, and the mayor. And want to ask folks to go ahead and call in and express your concern about retaliation in the town of Chapel Hill. To go ahead and get started, we're going to flesh out that retaliation, but to give folks a context of the conditions for labor in general in Chapel Hill, in North Carolina, and in the South, some might not know, but North Carolina and Virginia are the only two states in the whole country that actually specifically ban collective bargaining by public workers. What that means is that even if the town of Chapel Hill wanted to negotiate with workers through a union in the town of Chapel Hill, that they'd be barred from having a legally binding document. And the International Labor Organization of the United Nations has condemned North Carolina and the United States of America for violating this basic human right that's recognized all over the world. They condemned that in response to a lawsuit that our union, the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers Union of America, brought to the International Labor Organization. Our union consists of state workers throughout the state, around, especially at the UNC system schools and in the Department of Health and Human Services, which are the psychiatric hospitals and the developmental disability. And we also have city and town workers throughout North Carolina. Our union was one of the ones who assisted the Raleigh City Workers Union in 2006. After they went on strike to go ahead and win several victories. They got paid for their overtime and a number of others. And one of the things about why we need collective bargaining in the state of North Carolina, and when I say we, not just workers, but citizens and residents, is because it shouldn't have to go all the way to a strike for basic issues that should be able to be negotiated. Unfortunately, that's the extent that workers have to go to raise issues that affect both them and the quality of services that they're able to provide to the public. So that's one key thing we want to make clear. And again, to give a little context for what's going on, I want to ask Kerry and Clyde to just give a brief, you know, a beginning summary of the kind of grievances that they've been filing, the kind of activity that they've been helping to lead in the town of Chapel Hill, to give some context to show that what's happened to them within the past week is clearly retaliation. Kerry, you want to describe some of the grievances y'all have filed?
Okay, yes. I filed, first of all, on February the 12th, which I just got to respond in June, but we have filed grievance about safety and hostility.
Hostile environment.
And on March the 15th, I made a grievance of Clyde of hostile, and on May 10th, we filed a grievance. We talked to the mayor about it. On February the 11th, we asked him what to do, and he told us to don't let our time run out, to take it to EEOC. And on
That's the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which means you almost have to hire a lawyer on your own money, right?
That's right. And on April the 23rd, we gave Roger Stansel a letter, him knowing that I covered all these bases. And on April the 26th, they denied one guy, Kenneth Marsh. And April the 9th, and filed a grievance on April the 15th, supervisors not following procedures. And on May 10th, we met with the mayor. And on May the 17th, I retained Elizabeth Haddock, an attorney of law. And
these were grievances in which you were challenging discriminatory promotions, right?
Yes, ma'am. And June the 2nd, 2010, I filed a charge of discrimination for filing with the EEOC, a draft of EEOC charge. And on June the 25th, Clyde, we filed racist treatment.
Yes, I'd like to speak on that right there. What we were saying is that they had, well, I have one of the larger routes and stuff, and what we were saying was the people that had less seniority than us were coming in and they were getting easier routes, and we didn't think it was fair, because we had been there longer, and so we filed a grievance on race mistreatment, because from the facts that we had was that every time a person came in that had lesser time, the majority of them, they were white. So we filed a grievance on that right there. Mm-hmm. And one of the other grievances that I filed was that it was a safety issue where we were coming down where the trucks were moving and we were crossing over the road into traffic and stuff. And the truck was doing a whole lot of backing up with the mans on the truck and stuff. And we just felt like that was a safety issue and stuff. And so we brought it before management, and management just took a blind eye to it and said, I mean, we went through meetings and everything and nothing really changed. So basically what they were saying is, you know, file a grievance, and that's all you're going to basically be able to do, because we're not willing to move off nothing.
But you were really fighting this not just for the safety of the workers, but the safety of the public.
Yes,
because
yes,
they were backing up, you could kill people.
Yes,
and
yes,
they turned a blind eye.
So basically, out of all the grievances that Mr. Bigelow talked about that we filed, we've got response, but not the response that you would think that the people in management would be making, and it's kind of disappointing at this time.
Thanks, Clyde. Could you describe what they management promised you in terms of changing your route based on your last grievance? Did they say they were going to give you a different route?
Well, basically, I had filed a grievance on trying to get on a smaller route because I had been there longer, and guys with less seniority were coming in and getting a lesser route. So I filed a grievance. So it went before management, and management, on documentary, said that the next route to come open, either would be up to me to choose, or if that wasn't the right fit for me, I could let it go. So eventually when the route came up and a guy got another job, he moved on to another higher position, management still refused to let me go on the route, even though they went, even though it's on documentary that I was supposed to go on that route.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
It's been that kind of struggle. We do what we want to do with you. You work for us. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Thanks, Clyde. And we're going to get, folks, we're giving you the background of how active these two brothers have been. Not just these two, though. They've been helping to lead workers throughout the town of Chapel Hill in public works and transit in parks and rec around a number of these kind of issues that are not just in solid waste or just in public works. Want to get a little bit more from Kerry. What was the hiring story that you started filing charges on back in December, January? What actually happened?
I've been in working for Solid Waste in Burlington for City of Burlington for 18 years. I was a operator. And I come to Chapel Hill, I got in through the collection because I had talked to Larry Strout, the supervisor at Chapel Hill, and he told me I was asking about being hired as an operator. He told me it would be hard for me to get in just hired as an operator, but if I got inside, then it would be easier for me to become an operator. So when the job come open, for a collector, I went in through the collector and I worked there for a couple of years because I've been to MTA truck driving school and driven trucks for, like I say, basically 18 years and the one-armed bandit, well qualified. So when the job finally come open, it was this white guy who had worked 4 years from Michigan. They hired him, and then I wrote my first grievance. And when I wrote that, they put it on hold. So not too long ago, they did a couple of more interviews, and they hired another guy, which he didn't have no more experience than the first guy they tried to hire, which he was black. So, you know, that's what started the grievance, what started me writing grievance, that unfairness, which was unbelievable because, you know, Chapel Hill known as Southern Heaven. And so I come to Chapel Hill thinking that I was going to get better pay and just a lovely place to work. And I don't come to find out that it's totally opposite.
Not heaven.
Of heaven.
So there's been a, y'all have helped not only yourselves, but other workers file grievances. Just a quick question. Is your impression that, management's real happy when they get these grievances?
Oh, no. When we first started filing grievances, there was a lot of delay. Mm-hmm. They was putting us off. I mean, it would be sometime anywhere from 10, 20 days later before they would respond to us. So no, they're not happy with the grievance. And matter of fact, I don't even think they were used to grievance.
Now, in addition to grievances, y'all have been active in other kinds of ways. I know one thing is y'all travel to Raleigh for a lobby day with Miriam and others,
and other WILF members
and NAACP members to Raleigh. And I believe you got to meet Reverend Barber from the NAACP and have a picture taken with him. Can you tell us a little bit more about going to Raleigh and going to the legislature and what y'all were doing there?
Basically, when we went there, we went to see some of the state senators and stuff, and to talk about the collective bargaining stuff, where workers would have rights and all that. And I think, you know, me being the first time being over there and going down this road right here, I think it's very important that people pay attention because of the stuff that's going on around you and stuff. And I think collective bargaining and public workers having the right, because you find yourself in a situation like this. This is down the line. Me and Mr. Bigelow are in this predicament, catching retaliation at its best. And if people don't get wise and get more knowledge about this, this is gonna happen a lot. This is just the tip of the iceberg when management can shut you down like this and do you any kind of way.
Can I just jump in mm-hmm. for a minute? I want to say that the two brothers and other workers who came to the collective bargaining really put a face on what it means not to have rights in the workplace, an unjust workplace, as a result of, as Steve said earlier, a Jim Crow law passed in 1958 that denied public workers the right to organize and collectively bargain. But I think their presence mm-hmm. was powerful, and I think it sent a message to other workers that they have the power to really work collectively to make change, both in the legislature and in the workplace.
Thanks. Now, I hear there's a bulletin board up at Public Works and that there's some pictures and other things. Can you describe what's gone up, one of some of the examples of what's gone up on that bulletin board?
Sure. We have a picture of the mayor and about five of us, and also Reverend Barbara, and also pictures from the legislation in Raleigh.
We have a picture. We have like a UE-150. We have like something to do with the state convention. We got a response from people making comments and stuff about, you know, on the paper. Basically the board is a mixture. It's just a mixture of information for people, you know, putting a picture out there and putting a face where people can see and understand, you know, really the bigger picture, not just seeing people, you know, talk about it, but informational. It's an informational board, and you know, a lot of people I respond back from a lot of people, you know, they responding to it and stuff, and I think that's kind of a problem too, because okay. The information is getting out. Mm-hmm. The more information get out, you know, the more knowledgeable people get.
Do you think the other workers and management are aware of y'all's level of activity and leadership in fighting for justice?
Sure.
Yeah, because a simple fact, we're holding meetings out there every Friday. Mostly every Friday, mm-hmm. we're holding UE-150 is holding meetings. Mm-hmm. They know, and they know very well. They know.
And they don't like it.
Well, appreciate it. I want to move into the retaliation. But just to sum up for our listening audience, is a lot of information. But what you've heard so far directly from two workers here who are in solid waste, cleaning up the garbage and the everything else here in the town, working hard, is that they filed grievances on behalf of themselves and other workers for discrimination and racism. Specifically in hiring, you heard from Carrie an example where another person was hired and a white person, and the town admitted that there was quote-unquote limitations or discrepancies a word that they admitted that was problems with the hiring process. Then they came back and hired someone else with the same or less experience than Kerry. So around hiring, as Clyde has shared, there's been discrimination and racism around route assignment. Okay, not only Clyde, but another worker who's been there quite a long time, more than 15 years, and never has given, even though he's been asking over and over again for a different route, he's never been given it. Now that the union's been around and we've been filing grievances, all of a sudden management has been responding on certain things, has been forced to respond on certain things. We don't think it's a coincidence that through all this activity, the superintendent of solid waste, Harv Howard, is no longer working there. Now, this came after the EEOC charge, after an investigation. We don't know if he made a career change. We have no information about why he's no longer the superintendent of solid waste, but we think it's quite a coincidence. So we can see from the testimony of Kerry and Clyde and this other information that the workers getting together have had a major impact, okay? Plus them being out there in the legislature, having their pictures on there, having other workers' pictures on there, is publicly known that these are two of the leaders of these activities. So that brings us up to Friday, excuse me, a week ago Friday, where they filed a couple more grievances. Can you tell us what the two grievances were, Kerry?
Yes, one was on safety, and the other was on a grievance that they had made Kenneth Morris withdrawn, and we, rehashed it. And they was threatened to have a grievance on Monday if they hadn't gave Clyde the route that they had promised him. So they was looking at three grievances on the 20th. And when we came in that morning, they held us off the truck and gave us administrative leave.
And can you tell us, administrative leave, according to their policy, is just to clarify for the public, is that it's paid, it's paid leave while they investigate whatever it is they're talking about investigating. And I'm reading from the letter on September 20th that was given to both y'all from Lance Norris, Public Works Director. And it says here that the town has received, quote, several complaints regarding your behavior during work hours that rise to the level of a serious incident, and an investigation has been initiated. Now, did they give you any information about these several complaints?
That's one of the problems that we had, as we haven't received anything from our immediate supervisor. Our supervisor never came to us. We never had any writ-ups or nothing, or nobody never came to us. Crew leader, the driver, he never came to us. All of a sudden, we have several complaints. The town gets several complaints. They get thousands of complaints. What makes this complaint so different? But the proper procedure was not followed because our immediate supervisor never told us about a complaint. We never had any writ-ups or nothing. This right here that they brought up about complaints, before it got that far, we should have known.
These are also two workers that have worked very hard with stellar records, and they're unsubstantiated claims. Anybody can have an anonymous complaint, and you were not allowed to face your accuser. You weren't allowed to address it. As you said, the procedures weren't followed and so on. And I did want you to mention the 2007 statement, because everything we're saying is city policy against discrimination. Everything we're talking about, Roger Stansel, which is why we're going to repeat his number, has said over and over again, we will not tolerate discrimination and harassment and so on. And yet that's exactly what they're doing, including the managers and supervisors he's hired since becoming the town manager.
And I want to repeat that number again. We've got five more minutes, and I think by the end of this, you'll feel very strongly to go ahead and make this call. Again, it's 919-968-2743, and after hours, you can leave a message. We suggest you leave your name, your own phone number, and ask for a response call about your concern about this retaliation. So to get towards the end of this, the town is saying this isn't retaliation. They're saying that, hey, you're getting paid. We're investigating something. If we don't find anything, you come back to work, everything's good. So they're saying there's no discipline been taken. Why do y'all think that this is retaliation?
Well, for me, it so happens that after all this, as a Friday, that Monday before they let us go, we know it's retaliation. We be on the job. We hear people talk, man. We know management dislike for our activities, getting people knowledgeable or something. If you went on Public Works right now, most people would tell you that me and Bigelow were troublemakers because of the simple fact of getting knowledge out, and management won't have it. They will not stand for you to get any knowledge out to workers. You have a lot of workers out there that are going through the same thing we're going through, but they're scared. Management, they don't have the knowledge. I don't remember the last 13 years I was out there, anybody ever came out there and told me how to file a grievance. I never knew anything about it.
And also because Clyde and I, we supposed to be a team, a crew, but they pulled me and Clyde off the truck, but James Jones, the driver, he remained there, and he's not a part of UE-150. So...
Well, just want to make at least one comment is that being both an interviewer and an organizer with UE-150, that our view is as the town of Chapel Hill local union talking to other workers is that this is clearly, while they haven't been denied their wages, is that this scares a lot of workers, okay? People don't understand the difference between any other kind of suspension and a paid investigatory suspension. Right. They've also been barred. It says, you are not to visit town hall or any town facilities or work sites during your administrative leave. Now, they didn't have to do that. Management didn't have to do that according to their own manual. The implication is clearly that there's some dangerous stuff going on. And as far as we're concerned as a union, the dangerous stuff is the retaliation. Mm-hmm. Retaliation, unfortunately, mm-hmm. we've seen all over the country tragic situations, and that we certainly are concerned about both this in the town and also about, as Miriam will share, about at UNC Chapel Hill in terms of management really making serious threats and then the chancellor, and in this case the town manager, not coming out and condemning this kind of retaliation. So again, to sum up the story, Carrie Bigelow and Clyde Clark have been two of the leaders filing safety and health complaints, some of which have been resolved, we're happy to say, but put pressure on management, filing discrimination charges, filing issues in terms of route assignments, coincidentally, a major superintendent is no longer working there, and that now they've been put on administrative leave, coincidentally, you know, we don't think coincidentally, right after they filed another few grievances, and at this point, they're not allowed on the town grounds, and this is clearly, according to them, according to our union, and according to the rest of the workforce, students, WILP, and NAACP, and many others, as retaliation. And they should be put immediately back on the job, because that's allowed, according to town policy, be immediately put back on the job, pending any investigation, and that they should have a right to have someone go in with them when they're given the results of the investigation. Right now, the town is saying they don't have that right. We feel that's a denial of due process. Again, we're asking the public who's concerned about justice for workers, who's concerned about the quality of services being provided here in the town, and who are concerned about basic fairness, to go ahead and call 919-968-2743. Again, that's 919-968-2743. 2743 and tell the city manager, Roger Stansel, that you're very concerned about this retaliation and look forward to hearing of these two excellent workers being put back on the job immediately so that they can continue to provide the quality services that they have been to the town.
And tell them you also expect them, Roger Stansel, town manager, and all the supervisors to honor the town's policy against discrimination, harassment, and retaliation, and to live by his own statement in 2007. I want to thank Steve and Clyde and Kerry. We will have you back and other workers back. This is an ongoing series. Wolf is deeply invested in workers' rights and workers' justice in the workplace. So it's a pleasure to have you both, all of you.
And we want to thank Wolf for letting us go ahead and have some time on the show to share with the residents here about what's truly going on in the workplace. Thank you.
Yeah.
By the way, you can also not only call Roger Stansel, but call your council member and call the mayor. And that's the same number. You can reach your council members and the mayor to the same number Steve gave you. Let them know that you're concerned about workplace justice. Thanks, everybody, again.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Miriam. Thank you, Clyde and Carrie and Steve. That was a very enlightening and important lot of information that we just got. I've been hearing you mentioning, Miriam, that this was going on, but I didn't know all the ins, ands, and buts till now. And you're right, meeting these two workers in person just brings it home to your heart so much.
I just want to point out that my co-chair on the Labor Committee, we're co-chair of Lori and I and others on the Wilf Labor Committee, mm-hmm. but Jerry Neville and I are co-chairs of the NAACP Labor Committee. And Jerry and Paul Wolford and a group of others have been meeting with the mayor along with Clyde and Kerry. So this is spreading. All workers feel intimidated by not only filing grievances because they're afraid they'll be retaliated against, but they're looking at this administrative leave as another tool to intimidate workers who are trying to organize a collective power in the workplace.
And we're going to take a station break, but this so connects in with our other work with the UNC housekeepers. We've had some of them on a radio show just a few weeks ago, and that struggle also continues, and we'll give you an update in just a minute. I just want to do a station break right now and tell you that this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, affectionately known as WILP. This is WILP's radio hour, the Peace and Freedom Hour. And we are very honored to be underwritten by Internationalist Bookstore, 405 West Franklin Street. And this is another real community institution. It's like WCOM is run by volunteers who do this out of love for getting good information out to the public. And you'll find books there that you are not going to find in the big bookstores, although there will be some overlap. And they also are very nice about ordering any book that they don't have there. It's a small bookstore, and it's also a community resource center. You can go in there and find out what all the progressive, or at least a lot of the progressive happenings are around town. And by the way, you can get some nifty bumper stickers along with a few other things. If you're having trouble with your reception, because this is a low power station, you can stream us live at WCOMFM.org. And this, you can also find out more about WILF at TriangleWILF.org. And remember, WILF has a P in it for peace, WILPF, TriangleWILF.org. And when you go to our website, along with other information, you can also link to all of our, or most of our previous radio shows, which are on such timely topics that they're not out of date, or very few of them will be out of date. So I want to get back to labor issues. Dick Paddock's our engineer, Miriam Thompson's our Wolf sister, let's just do an update on the housekeepers. They did finally get the meeting this week with the chancellor. Those of you who have been paying attention know that just like the the issues that you just heard. This was workers being treated unfairly, workers being intimidated, workers being having vindictive actions taken against them. And it started out just because a worker who had just been cleaning a stove, which had a lot of, if you've ever cleaned an oven and with the chemicals, you know that those fumes are pretty bad, sat down to catch her breath and see if she needed to use her asthma inhaler. And the supervisor walked in, and Miriam, you want to pick up, wasn't
it? Yeah, she was suspended without pay, without as people pay. Know. And because of housekeeper pressure and campus and community support, including Wilf, that played a major role in mobilizing her, she was brought back to work, and her pay and another sister's pay was restored. But that's only the most recent mm-hmm. explosion of violence against housekeepers and abuse.
It's decades old.
I mean, Al McShirley, many of you know, our great civil rights attorney, filed a lawsuit against the university in 1995. Got a contract, by the way, a historic contract for public workers. But as soon as the contract was over, of course, new chancellor, all the gains were buried. Mm-hmm. So the struggle continues. Just to give you a quick update, and then we're going to go global. No, we're going to go national and then global. Just to give you an example of what they're fighting, Lori mentioned that they met with the chancellor. First of all, we modified this so-called sit-down policy so that now they were clear to say that rests, like catching your breath or going to the bathroom, are not considered formal breaks. They're rests, which is the argument.
This was not just language.
This was important for the housekeepers.
It was important.
And a small victory, but still a victory.
It was a victory.
As they point out, however, the sit-down policy is still out there. It's not enforced
It's been clarified where they can do that, but there's still wiggle room with
It gives too much arbitrary authority to supervisors who can interpret, because as the housekeepers say, because of a larger issue of management culture.
And that's the big issue.
Managers. And they're all from the military, by the way.
Yes.
Every one of the big ones are, not that we don't support our soldiers.
Our soldiers.
But these are the same military guys that put in a training program that they call boot camp for service cleaners. So the sit-down policy still has to be enforced against arbitrary behavior by mm-hmm. supervisors and discrimination. There are charges of sexual harassment, the mm-hmm. boot camp training. So it's all about a management culture and not just focusing on one supervisor that we gave an example who was, interviewed in the
Tar Heel. And raised quite a stir
it's her bosses.
Brutality of her remarks.
But her bosses obviously endorsed this
mm-hmm.
this kind
She's
of behavior.
She's still there.
So nor has there been a real serious rebuttal in the Tar Heel or any other paper from the chancellor on down challenging this kind of behavior. So they're also asking for a larger meeting of housekeepers. Remember, we've been calling the chancellor, so I want to give you that number again, calling the chancellor to make sure he listens to all the housekeepers and invites important members of the campus and the outside community, including Wilf and NAACP. And they're demanding an independent task force to really look into the history of abuse of the housekeepers, an independent task force that they have had in the past.
And I will give the chancellor credit. He has listened some. He's not understood it deeply enough or done some of these further things that we think would make such a difference in the culture. However, I think he is open. It is worth calling him. He is not a closed-minded person, and we have great hopes that he will help this university regain some of its greatness and not stay mired in this Jim Crow past. You can call him, Chancellor Thorpe. We hope you are continuing to listen at 919-962-1647. 919-962-1647. Or email him at holden@unc.edu, and Holden is Holden, Chancellor Thorpe. And I guess for the email, did you put the whole thing or just this part? I'm not sure.
It is the whole thing.
Oh, the whole thing.
It's
just that part.
It's Holden at UNC.edu.
Yeah, so
and the demands you want to make is we want an independent task force. Abusive housekeepers have gone on too long. Mm-hmm. Decades of abuse. We want an independent task force.
Investigating management culture.
That's right.
How
that's
to improve
right.
and have managers who know how to work as a team and who are not still trying to think that they're in the military and ordering the privates to clean the latrines. Yes. Okay, so we will keep you informed. This is an issue that's dear to WILP's heart and the NAACP's heart. And so these are two labor issues. And as Steve Bader mentioned at the beginning, this is also connected with this state being one of two, North Carolina and Virginia, still have these also Jim Crow laws that came out as the civil rights movement was beginning to gather steam, that they got very frightened. And in 1958 or 59, they had this bill to not allow any kind of collective bargaining. Now, keep in mind, by public workers, this does not mean unions necessarily. Just collective bargaining, so you're not just by yourself going to a supervisor, that you as a group can talk together and go as a group.
It's also better for planning and workplace.
Absolutely.
By the way, the same issue comes up with housekeepers as the municipal workers.
Yes.
They serve the students. They're the ones that keep the dorms clean. They're the ones the students come to because they're kind of in loco parentis. They're the ones that clean the office, and they're the only ones that are on their feet all day, which is why this idea of not taking a rest was so obnoxious.
So this is Bill 9598, and you can call your legislature, and we'll give you some numbers in a bit to Ellie Kinnaird, who would be support you, but it's always good for her to get phone calls, Joe Hackney, that we get Bill 9598 abolished.
It's so public law 9598.
Thank you, public law. Thank you, Miriam.
On collective bargaining. Okay.
Now we're going to move from the local labor issues to a national issue, and then we're going to take that global. And the issue is one that is a wound in, I think, many of our hearts, but a wound in the Mideast, and that is the whole issue of Palestine and occupation and repression in Palestine. So, Dick, you want to start telling us what's been happening, we found out in just the last few days? With the FBI?
This is not directly related to the Palestine question. It's a question of peace workers who are trying to be on the cutting edge of getting peace in Palestine and in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
And
it is related to Palestine.
Yeah,
so it is connected
to Palestine, but it's more local in the sense that it involves people here. On the morning of September 24th, 2010, at about 7 o'clock in the morning, FBI agents armed with grand jury subpoenas and in some cases search warrants, raided the homes of several anti-war and social justice activists in Minnesota, Michigan, and Illinois. They also have contacted other activists in Wisconsin, North Carolina, and California. Specifically, they went to the home of Costa Harlan here in North Carolina, in the central area, and interviewed him, or tried to interview him. He knew his legal rights, and he refused to talk to them without the presence of his lawyer, but they apparently were trying to interview him about his peace activities, and specifically about his activities in the Freedom Road Socialist Organization. So that sounds to me like they're also going after the Columbia Action Network, the Palestine Solidarity Group, and the Minneapolis Anti-War Committee. And the Freedom Road Socialist Organization. And those were in Minneapolis and Wisconsin and California and Michigan and Illinois as well. So the FBI is going to major peace groups which have a long history of working to try and free people who are being oppressed by those who are trying to
fight for justice.
Yeah, fight for justice in cases where the United States military and other parts of the United States government are contributing to the oppression, particularly in the areas of Palestine and Colombia. So what they have commanded the recipients to bring with them to the grand jury proceedings all pictures and videos relating to any trip to Colombia, Jordan, Syria, the Palestinian territories, or Israel. All items relating to any trip to Colombia, Jordan, Syria, the Palestine territories, or Israel. And several other things. All records of any payment provided directly or indirectly to Hatem Abudaya, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, or the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. There are several online petitions. In particular, you can go to the North Carolina website called RaleighFist.wordpress.com.
Would you repeat that, Dick?
Yes. It's Raleigh, F-I-S-T, .wordpress.com. And I'd forgotten what FIST stands for.
You also have the number and how they can get to Attorney General Holden.
Right, yeah. And this website, if you go to RaleighFist.wordpress.com/2010/09/26, there's a list of links there that you can use to find petitions to sign and get some more background information, including a group of about 200 people that gathered in one of the states in the Midwest in order to protest the situation that was going on. The one other thing that you can do that we know for sure will work, at least you can get through, because I checked it out, you can call U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder at 202-353-1555, or write an email to askdoj@usdoj.gov.
Could you give us that phone number again, Dick?
Sure. The reason you want to call Attorney General Eric Holder is that because he is the head of the Department of Justice, he has control of the FBI.
Okay.
So he's the one to call to protest about their actions. And the phone number is 202-353-1555.
That's great. Thank you for getting that number, Dick.
And there's also the email askdoj at usdoj.gov. And I avail myself of both items today, so I know they work.
Okay, that's
I want to remind people that they can order, can I say that, Dick?
Yeah.
They can order a CD of this broadcast, a $2, you can call Lori Hoyt for any of this information.
No, not about the...
How do we get the CD, Dick? Because people, you know, I know they have, Lori asked for their pens and pencils and papers ready.
I'm not in charge of that.
But who's? How can we get the CD? How can people get the CD of this broadcast?
You're talking about the Democracy Network?
No, right now, our broadcast.
Our broadcast. Oh, our
how
broadcast.
Can you get a CD?
Yeah, call Lori at her number and ask
her. And I'll just call you.
And she'll
So that's 968-1888. 968-1888.
And I will forthwith make a CD.
Okay. Yeah.
You can call me too for that. Yeah. Matter.
And your number is
929-1786.
I just thought that's like directly to the one who's going to
sure.
do it.
Yeah. Good.
Because also Amy Goodman, you can probably also go to Democracy.
Democracy Now.org
and get
and
more information.
She had a terrific program and had two of the people on his homes. It wasn't just that they went to their homes. The two people she had on her show, they were totally ransacked over 4 hours. Every book, every paper they went through, their children's toys, they just destroyed everything that they owned.
And took away computers.
Took away computers and everything. And right in front of their small children. And, you know, their lives are...
That's what you want to tell Eric Holder. I mean, he is key.
What kind of Nazi tactics is this?
I wouldn't go that far, but it is
pretty nasty.
No,
maybe don't say that.
Yeah. No, hang up.
But one of the things that Costa Harlan mentioned was that... for the last year, he has kind of put his activism aside because he has to work in order to earn a living, and he has also been taking care of a gravely ill relative. And this was
quite a
big disruption to his life, and certainly increased the stress on both Costa and his relative to have this happen at their early hour of the morning on September 24th.
We thought we were going to...
This stuff needs to stop.
It does need to stop, and I think that we have spent a lot more time than... That's okay. No, we were just going to 15 minutes on the municipal workers. So I think, Miriam, we'll just touch on, that you've got so much material prepared about Palestine, and I think next week we can just pick up, if Tana doesn't have anything else scheduled, but we'll pick this up because this... Why don't you mention why this is so... What's just happened?
Well,
I
think Dick.
Days.
Yeah, I think this is a real segue from what Dick was talking about. Many of you listened to Amy Goodman, and you know that a recent Jewish boat to Gaza was commandeered by the Israeli army military. One refusnik. He's a former Navy pilot. And he was beaten, now we understand, beaten and tasered. There was a Holocaust survivor who was also challenged and on the boat. And, of course, Israel's contending that they're related somehow to... This is an 82-year-old Holocaust survivor related to Hamas, who they should be sitting down and negotiating with anyway. But I want to make it clear that this is... And I'm going to give you Obama's number, as we're calling Holder and calling Roger Stansel, the mayor and council members.
We said to have your pen and pencil ready.
We get a pen and pencil ready, but I want to remind people this is terribly important as Obama and Hillary Clinton, President Obama and Hillary Clinton are trying to create a peace treaty. I'll talk about what's happening to the settlements in a minute. You should know that Gideon Levy was also on Amy Goodman, many of you heard, calling Gaza the largest prison in the world, challenging the U.S. has... denied the UN report that just came out. The Human Rights Council denied their report that is challenging Israel's previous murder of 9 people on the Turkish ship Mavi Marmara. How would you pronounce it?
Mavi Marmara.
Marmara, right, Mavi Marmara. And they have issued a really stunning report on the abuse of human rights. We have, of course, ignored that complaint. We say it's biased. This is the UN report, and yet Israel would not even participate with the UN Council interviewing them in there, agreeing to interviews. So the Obama number saying if you really want peace and security, you have to stop Israel from blockading Gaza after it bombed it to Miss Smithereens and is not allowing it to really
rebuild.
202-456-1111. 202-456-1111. You're angry about the continued blockade of Gaza, the refusal of them to allow a small shipment of medical supplies from a Jewish boat to Gaza. His other number is 202-456-1111. 1414 456-1414. This is going to be a series, as Lori mentioned. We wanted to start with what you can do now, but I also think the other effort is to challenge this media it's a blockade of news and concentrating only on the moratorium, which Israel, of course, has now abandoned. So more settlements are going to be created in the West Bank. I should alert people that if you look at the map of Palestine, and this came from David Price, that the opportunity for a viable, just two-state solution is rapidly diminishing, because Israel has now occupied most of what was originally would have been Palestinian land, not in 48, but at least 67, so that now it's a small fraction of what they need to really be a viable state.
And they're separated into little areas that are like Bantustans
that's right. It is again apartheid, divided by walls, highways that only Israel, checkpoints.
It's like a spider web of checkpoints. They move the checkpoints.
That's right.
They have nuts.
So if you look at the map, you can go on endtheoccupation.org. These are some extraordinary resources. Mm-hmm. So for our next broadcast, we're going to be bringing people who've actually been in Palestine and Israel, have spoken to some of the resistors. It's very important to know that Israel is not only occupying the Palestinian land, but it is trying to silence and jail its own Jewish opposition and protesters. Should also know that Israeli actors are refusing to perform in the settlements, and cultural artists all over the world are supporting the Israeli actors' decision. So lots to talk about. We'll make this a continuing series. I do want to tell you about Triangle Wilf and give you some important websites. For those of you who want...
Forgot to mention, we try to mention it every week. This is the year we're celebrating our 75th birthday in this area. Yes. Our national was started in 1915, but in this area, our local branch was started in 1935, and we are celebrating our 75th birthday, and we will tell you about a big celebration we're going to have December 5th, and everybody's...
But put it on your calendar.
Yes, put it on your calendar.
And while you're waiting for December 5th...
Yes.
This is the most extraordinary website, and I'm going to give it to you now. It's the Wilf, USA.org. Wilf, WILPHPF. Wilf, Peace and Freedom, WILPF.org. Click on to the Middle East. It'll have various areas where we're working, and there are DVDs that you can get from Wilf, but it is amazing what they're doing. DVDs exposing the Palestinian situation, an action guide to challenging U.S. policy, building the movement for a boycott, divestment, and sanctions. It's just an incredible repertoire of stuff that you can pick up, and good stuff for organizers. You also have, right locally, Jews for a Just Peace. I want to give you some very important Jewish organizations that you can contact. JFAJP, Jews for Just Peace, NC.org. There's also Jewish Voice for Peace.org. We'll keep giving this information, but I give you that because there are really important organizations. Of course, Christians for Peace in the Middle East and our Islamic brothers we're all working together. So I'm going to close with just a couple of quick things that we're doing locally with Wilf. One, we are working with the Coalition for Peace with Justice, of course, cpwj.org. You can get some very important education stuff that they're going to be doing. We're now starting a Triangle Boycott Divestment Sanctions group, and you can call me on that. Miriam, don't email, 919-370-4114, 370-4114. So we have a Triangle BDS campaign. October, we will mention, still tickets available for the great October March at International Books, but I do want you to know, get on their endtheoccupation.org website, because they are going to have a peace table around Israel, Palestine, and the continuing wars in the Middle East. Endtheoccupation.org. That's the U.S. campaign to end the occupation. And they are joining, along with 300 other peace and justice organizations, including Wilf, at the October 2nd rally in Washington.
You belong to the Jews for a Just Peace.
I do. I do. Yes. And we are also starting a clergy project, an interfaith clergy project.
Wonderful.
So there's a lot of exciting stuff around this going on, and you can certainly become involved and get your various organizations and congregations involved.
Miriam, you, with the short time that you had, you have been just absolutely wonderful in getting a lot of information out there. People's ears may be ringing, we told you to have your pen and pencil ready. And bye, Steve. And if you want,
let me just say, we'll put this on the website. We'll put all these various activities and resources on the website.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, do you want to? Do we still have one more minute?
No, not even that much.
Oh,
not
okay. Even. Well, goodbye from Wilf, from Lori Hoyt, from Dick Paddock, from Miriam Thompson, and Tana Hartman will be back with us next week. And stay tuned, because this is one of the best ways to find out what's going on. We call information from many sources.